Hey, Nick.
Hey, John.
Did you ever hear the spooky joke about the Halloween party?
No.
Well, legend says there was a group of kids that went to a party. And there's supposed to be a lot of people there, and they had costumes and punch and all things like that. But when they got there, they opened the door expecting to see lots of people. And one of them was thirsty. But when he went in, there was no punchline.
Happy October month, everyone!
And this is Stranger Still.
Disappointed we couldn't come up with a better name than October month.
What are you talking about? First of all, one word.
October month.
It's October month.
October month.
October month.
So you gotta put the emphasis on the tober?
October month.
October month.
Yeah. It's the spookiest month of the year. So what we got this October month day?
This October month day. Oh, also people, I'm Nick Wood.
Oh yeah, and I'm John Began. And what are we doing?
We're making this podcast. It's called Stranger Still.
And what's it about answering the questions about?
Things that you
never questioned to ask?
Yeah. I didn't. You caught me off guard.
Great.
I also want to point out that you might notice I sound a little bit better than the last 2 weeks.
And it's not because you're not sick.
It's not because I'm not sick. It's because my mic was backwards.
Yeah.
I'm such an idiot.
Well, it happens, right?
Yeah. We got like all this new equipment we talked about 2 weeks ago. And we got it all set up, and I was like, why does my mic sound weird? And we're like, whatever, we'll record. We'll figure it out later. I'm sure it'll sound fine. And then we listened back, and it didn't sound fine. And after we were done recording, you're like, wait, is your microphone backwards? I look at it. Sure enough, the logo is facing away from me.
Yep. Yeah. Ouch.
Yeah. So it was a cursed episode.
Spooky backwards. Ooh. Mic.
Yeah. Coming soon to a creepypasta forum near you. So, John.
Yeah.
This week, we're going to talk about, I alluded to this last week, but we're going to talk about why do we love horror?
That's the hardest word to say.
It's really hard.
Horror.
Both of us are huge horror junkies.
Mm-hmm.
We love the horror movies. I love horror stories. I don't know about you.
I love horror situations.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I run out of towels.
Yeah. And you have to like quickly run to your linen closet.
But you're naked and your window's open?
Yeah. I know that feeling.
And you're like, man, I shouldn't have skipped going to the gym. Because now everyone's going to see like my non-abs.
Yeah.
My abs aren't as defined as they could be.
You need the ab-abber from Strong Bad.
Yeah. Because I get that 12-pack instead of that 11.5 pack.
I just draw my 6-pack on. So why do we love horror, John?
We love horror because being spooky scared makes you feel good. Like busting. Busting makes you feel good.
Busting does make me feel good. I'm glad you brought that up. Because I've been wanting to talk about it for a long time. Why does it make us feel good? That's what I want to explore. Why do you think it makes us feel good? I want to start there.
I think that we've got these like little glands called the adrenal glands.
Yeah.
And they secrete, is it Red Bull?
Red Bull gives you wings. This gives you fight or flight.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, adrenal glands give you fight or flight. It's not as catchy, but it's true.
Yeah.
And that's why we like them. And even if not, it's psychologically thrilling.
Well, that's a genre of horror.
Yeah. So it's good for your soul.
Is it? Actually,
you know what? That's why I'm here, Nick.
Yeah.
To learn.
It's good that you brought that up, though, because I was going to get to this at the very end, but I'll say it up top that watching horror movies and consuming horror is actually good for you for a number of reasons, but I'll save that for the end.
Oh, my goodness.
To make sure you listen to the little thing.
Yeah. But make sure before you consume horror that you watch your calorie count.
It gets dangerous if you're like, ah, I can treat myself.
Yeah, I can have another one.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, you're like, ugh, that was too much gore. I'm so full.
I'm so sick of Saw 17.
Yeah.
Or Jaws 27.
That's the one where the shark, he gets a gun, doesn't he?
Yeah. Wasn't it Jaws 4 where the original shark's family comes back to avenge the shark that died in the first movie.
I think that's the real one where he...
It is real. Yeah. I don't remember which number
And he chases them down across the world.
Yeah. Yeah, he goes after... what's his face? You know his name. You
said Richard Dreyfuss?
Richard Dreyfuss. He goes after Richard Dreyfuss's family. The sharks do.
Good.
For killing the original shark. Also, like, Tremors 4 has flying tremors. They have, like, wings and stuff.
Oh, man. That sounds so cute.
Yeah. That was a wild tangent. Welcome to Stranger Still.
Yeah.
No, but there's a lot of things that you said that are right in what you said about why we love horror. A lot of it is the effect it has on our body with the release of adrenaline. But the biggest thing that horror does is it feeds into, I guess, our deep-seated evolutionary reactions. Very, very basic. Fear is our brain's response to keep us alive. Mm-hmm. It makes us want to get away from something if it thinks that it's going to kill us. So that way, we don't die.
Like today, I was driving home, and I was like, what did I eat today? And I was like, almonds.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I'm so hungry, I'm so scared, what if I die? And then I like got home and I ate meatballs, like veggie meatballs.
Yeah.
And I was like, I just feel like I watched a horror movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It had a really good response on you?
Yeah. And it gave me a bunch of meatballs in my in my mouth. Veggie meatballs.
Right. So some of the fear is also generated by nurture. Mm-hmm. Everyone always says nature versus nurture, but it's both. Let's get real.
Mm-hmm.
There are things like don't talk to strangers, where as a kid, your parents and your teachers are like, if you talk to strangers, they're going to kidnap you and kill you. Even though they're offering candy, they're still going to murder you viciously. So you
develop... Or kindly. You don't know that. Don't judge them. You don't know these people. They're
That's what they tell you.
They're literally strangers.
They are strangers. You develop a fear for strangers based on the fact that they might kill you, also known as stranger danger. There are countless examples of stories being used to scare people to keep them alive, right?
Yeah.
You have one example you brought to me.
I did have one. I had one that I heard on 99% Invisible, and it was about the 10,000-year problem.
What is that?
It is a...
Because I genuinely don't know.
Yeah. No, it's okay. So they had nuclear waste that they had to get rid of.
Where's this at?
They being the government. I think it was in the United States.
Okay.
And they decided that they needed to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to keep people away from it while it broke down until it wasn't dangerous anymore.
Right.
But how do you tell people 10,000 years in the future not to go near something?
Yeah.
When we can't even communicate with the people that we were 10,000 years ago, when the biggest technological innovation was farming.
Yeah.
So they tried to come up with ways to keep people away. Carl Sagan was invited to participate, but he couldn't get there.
Oh,
so
wow.
He wrote a letter saying you should just use a symbol. Like a skull and crossbones.
No. Oh,
okay. A spooky, spooky, scary skull and crossbones.
Yeah, that's pretty unanimous. Like, you're going to die.
Jolly Roger.
Yeah.
So, that whole podcast went into the history of that.
Yeah.
And they talked about how ultimately, like, things that lasted through all this time, like what we talked about in our last episode.
I was about to say, like, the legends of the vampire were in the Fertile Crescent. That's still prevalent today.
Yep. So they thought if they started spreading the ideas of a legend built around this area, like don't go in the woods, bad things happen.
Yeah.
People wouldn't do that, and they can keep people from settling there and building around the radioactive waste.
That's incredible.
One of the coolest parts of it was one of their ideas were to make songs about cats that glow in the dark around radioactive waste.
Yeah.
So they would genetically engineer cats to glow in the dark around radioactive waste and then make songs and like stories about how you shouldn't go near a cat that glows.
Yeah?
Yeah, this is all real.
I need to go listen to 99% Invisible.
Yeah, they had a song about something like Don't Glow in the Dark, Katie. Something like there was a band that they put that song in there. It was really neat.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yep.
I was about to endorse them, but they don't need any more endorsement. They're incredibly popular. But they got one more listener named me. So that, I mean, it goes back to cautionary tales.
Hi, me. Nice to meet you. I'm John. You're the dad. I'm just doing picking up your slack.
Thanks. I'm trying to move the podcast along. I'm sorry.
Chugga chugga woo woo. Let's go.
I thought you were making an Insane Clown Posse reference. What's with the clowns lately? Do you know what's going on with that?
Yes, I do.
What's going on with that?
It happened a couple years ago.
Yeah?
Also.
They're not doing anything, though, right?
No.
They're just around.
They're just around because of, like, the internet. And they're like, wouldn't this be funny? It's like a copycat thing.
Yeah.
Like when there's mass hysteria.
Like a 4chan thing.
Well, yeah. or Reddit or whatever, or people just reading.
Well, 4chan always does stuff like that, where they're like, everyone dresses clowns and go out and scare people. Ha, isn't that funny?
Except now people are getting, some guy got stabbed.
I saw that.
Yeah.
And they're not doing anything.
No.
Okay.
Well, they are threatening people's lives.
They are?
Yeah. There's a guy that whispered into a woman's ear, I should just kill you right now. All the teachers at this high school will wish they were never born. And he's like outside the high school. Yeah. And they just left.
Because I remember hearing about this when they were like on the East Coast, when they first, I think it was Georgia or something, they started popping up.
Yeah, it's in every state now.
And they weren't doing anything. And I feel like this is a classic example of telephone, where people are playing copycat, and then they're just like, what are these other people doing? I bet they're threatening these people's lives. So they're just like doing that and setting a bad example for these people that were just trying to be creepy.
Yeah. Yeah. They're trying to lure kids into the woods with money.
Yeah, I saw that too.
They're doing that. But they're not doing anything about it. Yeah.
That's really weird.
Yeah. It's just like auditions for haunted houses.
Yeah. That was, sorry. I really wanted to know what was going on with those clowns. So we got off topic. So that's nature. Or that's nurture. That's cautionary tales. Keeping people alive. There's a lot of nature in there as well. And I'll say mostly nature affects why we love horror. For instance, our fear of dark. Back in caveman times, we didn't know what was out there in the dark. Some people might go into the dark and never return. There might be spooky sounds out there of like wolves or lions growling at you from beyond this black veil. And you might die out there.
The black veil of darkness?
Yeah, the black veil of darkness.
Oh.
So why not be afraid of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want to die, so our brains kept us from going into the dark with fear. That's where our fear of darkness comes from. So I said also last time that I would explain why I'm a wimp.
Yeah.
It's because as a grown adult, I will admit, recently, I was afraid of the dark.
Yeah.
And nothing tests your fight or flight responses like having a child. Because I was, I read a lot of creepypastas. I went on creepypasta and talked about the Blair Witch for an hour. And then after that, I went and read more creepypastas. And my daughter woke up in the middle of the night, so I had to take her out to the living room until she went back to sleep. That was all fine and dandy until I had to take her back to her bedroom. And I had to walk past my dark kitchen with big reflective windows, my pitch black staircase, these two slightly open closet doors with nothing but blackness behind them, my bathroom door, which was open with a gleaming moonlight shining through, my closet where all my clothes is off to the side, which was completely black, and my bedroom door. And then I finally got to her bedroom. And everything in my body is screaming, run, 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 run. But you can't because you got this sleeping 6-month-old in your arms.
Yeah. So why didn't you like, yeah, then that makes sense to me. Except like, I don't understand why you didn't like.
Just throw her?
Yeah. Like safely, not meanly.
Just like on a pillow or something.
Like I would make my baby's bed a giant catcher's mitt, really soft, so I could just throw them there at any time. Does that make me bad? That's good. That's technologically advanced.
The future's now.
Everybody knows how aerodynamic babies are.
It's true. That's why they come out cone-headish when they're first born.
Yeah, they get a better spin.
Back to what I was saying. So, fear of dark. It's also interesting to point out that evolutionarily, we have developed a big fear of different creatures, like snakes or lions or spiders and that sort of thing. There was a study that showed that even at a young age, like 6 years old, I think it was, that children are quicker to notice a snake in this big environment quicker than they identify flowers.
Yeah. And I think, have you read that we have evolved? That even that's grown to be outdated. We're now, we have a gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's still evolving, but that's why in horror, you see a lot of creatures with giant fangs, a lot of serpents, that sort of thing.
The gun monster.
The gun monster.
The scariest monster.
From the movie Gunman.
Yeah. He comes up and he's like, I donate to the NRA.
Well, that's because
he's called the Second Amendment.
Oh, we should have led with that one. Evolutionarily, we needed to be able to point these things out right away, like snakes and stuff, because if we didn't, we'd get bitten or eaten and we'd die. But lastly, the other result of evolution is when we get spooked, either in real life or a horror movie, our old friend fight or flight comes in, which we talked about before, and we'll talk about it many other times, but again, that's when your body encounters what it perceives to be a threat, and your body releases a bunch of adrenaline, so when you decide to either fight, stay and fight, or flight, which is running away, makes it easier for you to do either one of those. But adrenaline increases your blood pressure, it increases your heart rate, improves your reaction time, and it helps you make those decisions even faster. All that being said, if your life is endangered in real life, you aren't going to walk away saying, let's do that again!
Unless it's a roller coaster.
Unless it's a roller coaster. We'll get back to roller coasters, because it does go into horror. But in real life, if you're like held up at gunpoint, you're not going to say, man, I can't wait till that happens again. Yet, when the same scenario comes up in a movie, you or I, horror junkies, are going to walk away wanting more. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of where the whole thing branches off. The difference is obviously in your brain. The problem with the brain is...
it likes to make stuff up.
Yeah, it likes to make stuff up. What I was getting at is that we don't know a lot about the brain.
If I knew more about my brain, I'd know the answer to that.
Right. But you don't.
If I could use my dumb brain better, maybe I would have known.
What we have is theories backed by research. And psychologists on this topic are very divisive, which I always dislike. Because every time I read a bunch of psychologists' theories, I'm like, just come together. All of these make sense when you put them together. Don't just think, oh, my theory is the right one. Because that dude over there has some good theories as well. Just mesh them together.
Yeah.
Come on, psychologists. The main thing I want to set up is a foundation for the idea of safety. And this is where I want to get back to roller coasters. When you're watching a horror movie, you know that you're not really in any danger. And when you're on a roller coaster, your brain might be like, well, this thing is going to... I'm going to go flying off the rails, or the wooden roller coaster is going to break down because it's 300 years old. But in reality, you're safe.
Well, unless you're watching a horror movie at gunpoint. And then they're like, you better watch this. This is my favorite part. Watch it. Did you see that?
The girl doesn't get away.
Oh, man.
I love that part.
Johnny Depp's such a good actor.
What horror movie is Sleepy Hollow?
I don't know. I guess so. Like, he's a gunman. I don't know what he's into.
Gunman? Yeah. Is he Jewish?
He's the gunman from October Month.
The gunman from October Month. Coming to a theater near you. So you know you're safe. Even though it might not feel like it, you know you're safe. But your body still has those fight or flight reactions. And I've said before that that releases adrenaline. And we've all heard of adrenaline junkies. And it's much the same reason as horror junkies. Alongside adrenaline releases, dopamine gets released as well. It's the chemical that goes to the reward receptors of your brain. And it doesn't affect everyone, but there are certain people like you and I that when we watch horror, it releases dopamine. We don't know what the difference is between people, but there is a difference between people. There's just people that don't enjoy horror movies because they don't get dopamine. Like my wife. Can't get her to go see a movie.
So she'll watch a horror movie and not get dopamine. She'll just get flight instead of fight?
Pretty much. She'll go to bed and have nightmares. And even on episodes of Doctor Who that I don't think are scary, she still has nightmares about them because they scare her.
Aw, dang. That's kind of sweet, though.
I know. We balance each other out. So all that to say that it's suggested that when it comes to this combination of fight or flight and the knowledge of being relatively safe is where you get that dopamine from. Beyond that, there's one psychologist, Dr. Glenn Walters, that believes much of the appeal comes from three things. Only three, Dr. Walters. Tension, mm-hmm. which I think speaks for itself. We'll still get into it in just a second. Relativism, which I'm going to simply say taps into our evolutionary fears. And then unrealism, which it allows us to disconnect ourselves from any real danger.
So these are the three causes of...
These are the three reasons why we like horror movies.
Oh.
Or why we like horror in general.
Okay.
And I buy into that. When we go to see movies or we're reading a book, there's this really long build-up, these situations compounding one on top of another to create this awesome tension. And then eventually there's this grand release of that tension, and there's a certain amount of satisfaction in that.
Yeah, so for tension, like, sometimes I'll have a bill due, and I won't pay it,
mm-hmm.
and I'll just, like, you know, watch my phone and, like, wait for them to call.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, we're gonna shut off your power. And I'd be like, oh my God, why would I go spend money on a movie when I could have this fun?
It's just real life.
Yeah. And then I pay my bill and I'm like, wow, that was pretty good fun.
That was pretty good fun.
Yeah. And then relativism. Sometimes I'm like, hey, was that my uncle? What if it's not my uncle? He's in my house. And that's relativism. And then the last one is unrealism.
Yeah.
And that's when you're like, is that my uncle? He's in my house. Oh, no, it's just a chair. Wasn't real.
It wasn't real the whole time. Well, the example I was going to give for tension is like you get that big buildup of tension and then the bad guy finally gets killed.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe our heroes successfully escape, or maybe even our heroes fail. But there's still this release of that tension.
Yeah.
And now for relativism, I wasn't going to talk about your uncle. I was just going to talk about what I talked about before with evolution. So just rewind the tapes.
Oh, let me tell you real quick. I'm going to touch on something with tension real quick, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Strangeland. Yeah. Have you heard of Strangeland?
No.
Strangeland is a movie directed by my friend's dad.
Okay.
Dee Snider.
Oh, yeah, I know that guy.
Yeah, so it's a famous movie.
Uh-huh.
And his whole theory behind it was exactly that. Like, people get killed in the movie,
mm-hmm.
and there's an end. That's the escape.
Yeah.
So in his movie, you get trapped forever.
Okay.
And there's no, like, release of that tension. And oh, that geez. Is the fear. Yeah. That's so you crazy. Don't just get killed, because then you can escape. It's worse than death.
Yeah. Is that a good movie?
I haven't seen it.
Oh. Well, maybe we should watch that, too.
Yeah. Deal.
All right. So the last little bit of Dr. Walter's theory is unrealism. And the article I read makes... Also, the article came from Psychology Today. Just want to say that up top. The article makes a point to say that it's counterintuitive to the relativism part. Because the relativism comes from our very real fears for our life, and then there's this part of unrealism. By keeping the story somewhat unrealistic, it allows us to disconnect from any real danger that we perceive, mostly with a situation that's highly unlikely to ever happen. Like, who's going to get chased by an axe murderer? It's happened, but how often?
Yeah, but like zero times, probably.
Probably. So that sort of dovetails into another theory I came across. And I don't have a name for it because this was just a general theory while I was reading other theories. But there's some sort of sick fascination that comes from exploring these weird situations that we're likely to never encounter. But maybe we're always curious about them. So what happens when you put four teenagers in a cabin and they get chased by a guy in a hockey mask? What's that like? Yeah. Who knows? Or like we talked about The Purge last week. Like what happens if murder was legal? Or what if there was no law? Like, it's the same reason that my wife reads Harry Potter 17 times a year is because it takes you to this other world that you'll never be able to explore, but you want to explore.
Yeah.
I think everyone can relate to that. But some of us are just really sick in the head. So all of this fantasy exploration of terrifying situations actually does help us mentally prepare for situations like this should they ever arise. And the satisfaction or acknowledgement of having come out of that situation, quote unquote, the example given was like a haunted house. You go through this scary haunted house and you come out on the end. You feel good about having survived and it gives you a self-esteem boost and it helps your brain cope with fear down the road. So based on the last horror movie you watched, what situation are you now prepared to live through?
If I moved into my aunt's house and she locked me in a room with my siblings...
What movie was that?
Flowers in the Attic?
Oh, never heard of it. Weird. Hopefully that'll never happen.
But now I'm prepared. Except that I don't think I finished it last time I watched it.
So you're not prepared.
Oh, man.
If John goes missing and I have a new co-host, he's probably stuck in an attic somewhere with his cousins. The last thing I wanted to touch on was from a psychologist named Deidre Johnston
mm-hmm.
that said there are four groups of people, only four. I don't know why. We can't just combine all these. Four groups of people that garner satisfaction from horror movies in different ways. So I said that not everyone enjoys things from horror, but the people that do enjoy horror break down into these four, and it comes down to our empathy for our heroes, thrill-seeking, and or overcoming fear.
Mm-hmm.
So the first group of people is people that have a low empathy for the characters, so they don't really care if they live or die, but a very high interest in thrill-seeking. Mostly just going after that adrenaline rush. Johnston calls these people gore watchers. So I just imagine people that exclusively watch the Saw movies or Hostel or something like that.
Gross.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of those. They're not scary to me. They're just gross. The second group is thrill watchers. These people both empathize with the characters, so they do care if they live or die, and they really enjoy the adrenaline rush. And I think that's where I fall into. Because I like the characters, I like the story, and I also like being scared.
Yeah, that's probably where I feel too.
I think so too. We're very similar in our tastes for horror. The third group is called independent watchers, which is kind of an odd name. They empathize with the characters, but rather than get a joy from adrenaline rush, they actually get more satisfied from their ability to overcome fear. So it's kind of like I said before with the haunted house where they come out of that alive and they feel good because they were able to get through it.
Yeah.
The last group is called problem watchers, And these people not only empathize with the characters, but they mostly empathize with the characters' feeling of helplessness. So in this horrible situation, got this axe murderer after him, there's nothing they can do, and they really empathize with that fact that there's nothing they can do. So then they've got that tension, and eventually some sort of payoff.
Yeah, like they get away, or they get it real good.
Yeah, or they get their comeuppance, which comes into this next guy. There was a film scholar that suggested, I say film scholar because he's not a psychologist and I don't like his theory, but he suggested that we as people like to stick to a social norm. When someone steps out of that norm, we want to see them punished. We want to see them get their justice. He mentioned in this article that, for instance, there's always that trope in horror movies that there's the sexually promiscuous teen or some sort of adulterer, and they always get slashed by the murderer. And he thinks that we like to see that instant justice for these people's sins.
Oh, good, good. So he's just like, what are you doing? Put your top on.
Yeah.
What are you doing? You know what? Nope. You deserve it.
Like, yep, you died. I don't care.
Great.
Good for you. The theory goes on to say that in the end, we're satisfied with what the villain gets. He gets his comeuppance. Which, the first reason I don't agree with this theory is because not every villain gets their comeuppance. Sometimes our heroes die. Like, I'm trying to think of a really old movie that I can't spoil that does this. Like?
Where heroes die?
Yeah.
Like No Country for Old Men?
Like No Country for Old Men. A horror movie like Dawn of the Dead, all of our heroes die.
Yeah.
So I don't agree with that. And I think there certainly is
some... Well, Dawn of the Dead wasn't that successful, though, if you think about it. Nobody really knows that movie.
No, not really. So. It's not that famous. Didn't spark a generation of movies.
Yeah.
The other reason, though, I mean, there is some sort of satisfaction to get from those things, but that isn't the reason to go to a horror movie. You can get that from, like, James Bond or... Toy Story.
Yeah.
You can... The bad guy gets it in the end.
Except that the scariest part of the new Toy Story was that lava scene. What was that?
Furnace?
Oh, man.
Yeah. If this were the case, if we went and sat through a horror movie or read an entire Ray Bradbury novel just for the justice that comes to the bad guy in the end, why would we put ourselves through all of that fear? Doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So that's basically all I got for psychology. For those of you that... didn't understand why people like me and John love horror. Hopefully you have a little bit better understanding now.
A little taste.
Better understanding now.
Just a little nibble. A little appetizer.
Now, for you, those of you out there that are still too scared to enjoy horror, I want to point out that there are some positive things of watching horror, consuming horror. Your blood is better at coagulation, which means that your blood clots better. So if you get a scab, it's better at healing itself.
Why? Because it's like, look how wicked fast I am. I'm going through your body.
Well,
I pump so quick when your heart pumps.
There's some sort of chemical that is released that the article was that
you get blood, scared and release anticoagulants?
Well, it's the opposite of that.
Oh,
it releases coagulants. And the article that I read this in was when you watch horror movies, your blood literally curdles. Like a blood curdling scream. It actually does curdle.
That's cute.
Yeah.
That makes everyone feel
pretty
good.
Cute. Yeah. The other benefit, though, is that you burn calories. And there was this great study where they had a bunch of people watch different horror movies and then recorded how many calories were burned during the viewing. And the top one, I don't remember what it was, but it wasn't what I thought it would be. It was like The Shining or something. But there's movies way scarier than The Shining. But I think around 100 calories were burned on average per movie, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Dang!
Yeah. So just watch 20 movies in one day, and you burn 2,000 calories.
Now I don't have to feel so bad when I break open the little Dabisco snacks.
When I get my Mike and Ike's at the movie theater.
Ooh, I could use another Cookie Crisp. I'm going through a doubleheader.
You know, I prefer Famous Amos. The other thing, though, is that obviously it increases your blood pressure if you need that. And also, your earwax production increases.
Oh, good.
Which I've known that for a long time. That when you're scared, earwax production increases. And I've always thought, whatever evolutionary tick makes that happen, I don't want to know where it came from.
Yeah. Why did we evolve to do that?
Yeah. Like, what scary creature killed us by going through our ears?
Oh, good.
Isn't that weird?
Earwigs are probably spiders, huge because there's so much oxygen in the world back in the day.
Yeah.
And they're just like, let me just sit right here on your ear. Let me just
give you a little nibble on your eardrop. So there you are. Do you want to recap for me?
Don't talk to strangers.
Right.
unless you've talked to them already and they're not strangers anymore.
They're no longer strangers still.
I'm still John.
Did I just like send you through a feedback loop?
Yeah. We use horror mm-hmm. in many different ways mm-hmm. to warn people, mm-hmm. to nature, to nurture. I also learned that nature and nurture are different things.
Yeah, you didn't know that before?
Well, I thought they were both nature, but one was with a Norwegian accent.
We gotta bring
I'm going into
in.
The nurture to chop down a tree in the woods.
You know, I think this is the first episode where you haven't done a New York accent.
I did.
Is that yeah. your recap?
That's my recap.
All right. Cool.
I could use something to read. Nice, quiet horror story.
Okay, I've got a really good horror story. And it's particularly terrifying because it's true.
Before we get to listener question, because we do have one this week, real fast, just want to say, if you want to follow us on Twitter, we've had a lot of good interaction on there lately. So follow us at Stranger Still.
Yep. Thanks for everyone who's been so supportive, helping us out.
Tons of people. We also have a Facebook group. So if you want to search for a Stranger Still, apparently there's, I looked this up today because someone mentioned it in the group that there's three results for Stranger Still. And one of them is like full of 37 people. And I think they're speaking like Russian.
Oh, good. Something.
And then the other one is a band that hasn't been active since like 2014. So we're the one that isn't those.
Yeah. There's a Russian stranger still.
Yeah.
He says, I'm still Vlad at the end, right?
I'm still Chekhov.
And this has been
Stranger Still.
Don't join that group.
Don't join that group. If you have a listener question, you can tweet it at the address I said before. You can email it to podcast@strangerstillshow.com. Listener question time. So our good friends on Twitter, the Loose Cannon Podcast, you should go check them out. The host, from what I understand, brings a guest on their show and then tries to get to know them based on a movie they like, which is a really cool concept.
Yeah.
Like they choose a movie that they like, not based on how good it is, but just like, this movie's fun and I like it on a personal level. And then she tries to get to know them through based on what they choose. So yeah, Loose Cannon Podcast. They asked us, why is 13 an unlucky number? What are your thoughts?
I think that's because of the legend of 13. Do you know that?
No. Was it to keep people from finding nuclear waste?
No, there was a guy that was, he was around the campfire with his friends. I think it was like, or at caveman times, cavewoman times. And he ate his like cave rabbit too fast and burned his tongue.
Oh.
And then he pointed to his tongue and he was like really thirsty. And he's like, wanted a drink. He's like, I'm 13. I'm 13. Oh, and they're like, hey, Cave Ricky?
I can't.
What are you trying to say, man? You could just say, I'm 13. And they're like, yo, man, I think he's called you fat. So he's like, Cave Richard, are you calling me a fat?
And then they killed him.
I'm 13. Yeah, exactly.
And then they killed him.
They killed
him. Okay.
It's brutal times.
God, well, alongside that theory, there's plenty of ideas of where the unlucky 13 came from. Just the fact that many people have tied 13 to bad things throughout history. I mean, you can do that with any number. That's why Japan's unlucky number is 4, mm-hmm. because they just have bad things that they've strung through the number 4. We've done the same thing for 13. First of all, we all know about Jesus and his 12 disciples.
Mm-hmm.
Well, counting Jesus, Judas was number 13, and he
was like, yo, Jesus, I swear I'm going to be totally chill to you all the time. And he wasn't.
And then he killed Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, he betrayed him. He didn't kill him.
No, he's just like, oops.
Oh, I did it bad.
Yeah.
Thanks, Judas. Secondly, on Friday the 13th, in October of the year 1307 AD, King Philip IV had a crap ton of Knights Templar killed. Like, he arrested them and then had them all killed.
Oh,
most
good.
Of them killed.
Why?
Because he wanted to.
Oh, good.
He don't like the cut of their jib.
Yeah.
And then lastly, there's normally 12 moon cycles in a year, every 28 days. But sometimes, every once in a while, there would be 13 moon cycles in a year. And the monks of churches were in charge of keeping like lunar calendars.
Mm-hmm.
And they would base all sorts of church events and stuff around the moon cycles. So when there was a year with 13 moon cycles, it was this giant headache for them because they had to move all these events.
Ugh.
Eventually, it just became synonymous with being unlucky.
Yeah, because like, oh, we got to do so much extra work.
Yeah, yeah. And they didn't like it. This has
neat.
Been...
Who are you?
I'm a spooky Nicolaton.
And I'm a John Boogan.
Oh, man, yours are way better.
Yeah, I had a lot of extra time.
Because I was, whatever. This has been Stranger Things.